In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. If you've made fun of Toronto in the past 2 decades, and you're not a real Canadian if you haven't, chances are you've made a crack about calling in the army.
With another big dumping of snow heading straight for us, Mayor Mel Lastman says he's preparing for another hectic day.
24 hours ago, Toronto Mayor Mel Lastman asked for military help to keep the city moving and safe. And tonight, the troops are here.
The ludicrous idea that Canadians would need the army to deal with snow is one of the most enduring jokes that sprung from what was, of course, an actual thing that happened. 20 years ago this week, in fact, then-Mayor Mel Lastman asked for help dealing with snow. Toronto was buried by a lot of it, and even more severe snowstorms were on the way. Lastman was a mayor attempting to secure help for his populace in the midst of what seemed, at the time, a dangerous situation.
What's your response to people who say that you've pressed the panic button?
Hey, better safe than sorry.
His phone call at the time might have been saving lives and cementing his legacy as a man who knew what to do in a crisis. With 20 years of hindsight, though, we know now that Lastman was indeed cementing his legacy and Toronto's legacy and the legacy of a moment treasured by Canadians everywhere except Toronto. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Nick Ferris is a reporter at the National Post who managed to talk to all the key players in this incredibly strange saga 20 years later.
We talked to a lot of people, 14 in total. We tried to get a good variety of perspectives from around the country, not only Torontonians who remembered this snowstorm happening in the ensuing arrival of the army, but people who kind of scoffed at Toronto from hardier parts of the country, we could say.
So, because it was 20 years ago, and because I think all the mockery has kind of distorted it, just explain what happened 20 years ago this week in Toronto.
So 20 years ago this week, Toronto had been battered by a record amount of snowfall. In the first 2 weeks of January 1999, it was about 118 centimeters that fell on the city in 3 separate bursts, mainly. So amid the third of these big snowstorms, Mel Lastman was the mayor at the time. His driver takes him out on a trip of downtown Toronto, residential, like narrow residential streets, to survey the damage that was happening. And Mel Lastman told me that he remembers thinking we'd better get the hell out of here or else we're going to get stuck on one of these streets in the snow. And he kind of had visions of, you know, fire trucks, ambulances, emergency vehicles getting stuck in the snow because another massive dump of snow was forecast for the next couple of days after that.
Right.
So the situation was quite dire in Lastman's estimation. So after his driver takes him out downtown Toronto, he gets home, chats with his wife, Marilyn, tells her about everything that's been going on, what the situation is downtown. And she tells him, you should call in the army. That was her suggestion.
So it was her suggestion.
It was her suggestion, he says, yeah.
And he did.
He did. So the next thing he did, the next morning, January 13th, he calls the federal defense minister, Art Eagleton, who was himself a former Toronto mayor as well.
Yeah.
So he appraises Art of the situation, tells him, you know, we have this terrible snowfall. More is coming the next couple of days. The city is going to be in big trouble, was what they were anticipating. So from there, Art takes that to his staff, the military staff. And in the course of that day, the next 12 hours or so, the military decides to dispatch several hundred soldiers to Toronto to help in whatever way they can, basically. So that came up in the form of about 300 local reservists who lived in Toronto, the GTA, and 438, I believe, is the exact number of troops who responded from Petawawa, Ontario. They drove down on the 13th to help out at Art's direction, but at Mel Lastman's behest for his call for help from the army.
So what was actually, aside from Mel Lastman going around with his driver, what was happening on the streets of Toronto? How bad was the city at the time Lastman made that call?
It was pretty bad. So the subway system had been immobilized in large parts. Subways in certain swaths of the TTC system had stopped working. Businesses and schools had been forced to close. Large segments of the city were basically paralyzed. And one person I spoke to was Mark Robinson, who's a TV storm chaser nowadays. And he was in his mid-20s, living in the Toronto at the time. He remembers 1999, that snowstorm, as the year right before he started storm chasing. So it kind of stands out as vivid in his mind. So Mark remembers living on one of these side streets downtown Toronto. And he says that he remembers not being able to drive anywhere. He was actually working at the University of Guelph at the time. So he would have to get from his home to the highway. And he said it was fine once you were on the highway getting all the way to Guelph, a couple hours drive. But the problem was it was impossible to get there. He said at one point he had to, when he was sort of pulling out of his driveway, he had to drive up on the sidewalk to get around cars that were stuck in the street. His situation, his memories are kind of emblematic of the larger struggles that a lot of people were having at the time, where the city was just kind of stuck in place due to this record snowfall that had been happening.
So the army gets here, and what do they actually do? Like, what are they assigned to do?
So the soldiers who came in from Petawawa, who formed the bulk of the response, they go to a base in North Toronto, the old Downsview base.
Okay.
And they're not doing much to start off. A lot of them are just kind of chilling out. The military, the Petawawa detachment, had planned winter exercises. So they're set up in the big gymnasium at Downsview, and they have all their tents with them. So some soldiers start, they're directed to start working on the regular, the planned winter exercise. The sort of immediate response that came down from the military from Petawawa is they had these bison personnel carriers, these armored vehicles that they drove down with them, part of the convoy from Petawawa. So immediately those vehicles were dispatched to help civilians in dire need, people who are having heart attacks, people who really need to get to emergency rooms. That was what Matt Lastman had envisioned needing the most, just help with that emergency side of things.
And that actually did happen. So they were out there working to save lives.
They were working off the bat to save lives, they were. And then the other side of it is that a lot of soldiers ended up appearing in photos that were dispatched or circulated all over the country with shovels in hand, because a lot of them ended up just being downtown and helping literally shovel the city out of this snow that it had found itself in. I spoke with one soldier, a reservist, who was living in Toronto. His name was Duncan Nyberg, and he was the guy who was dispatched by his superior on the day the Petawawa detachment arrived to go to Canadian Tire and take his Army MasterCard and essentially max it out, buy as many shovels and other winter equipment as he could. So he remembers going to Canadian Tire and only being able to buy maybe a couple dozen. Canadian Tire, for one, didn't have that many in stock. There had been a bit of a
run on them.
Exactly, a bit of a run on the store. So he was able to get some equipment, some shovels. And then the Army also went down to the City of Toronto Yards, this city equipment warehouse that they had. So they got a bunch more shovels there. So a lot of soldiers went out, the sort of command, the makeshift command center that the reservists here created in downtown Toronto. They were dispatching soldiers to various streets that needed clearing. So a lot of soldiers went out with shovels. There are visuals, photos of soldiers marching in a line, sort of 10 to a line, shovels in hand, going to their next assignment, the next city, the next
driveway,
exactly.
The next side street.
Yeah, the next sidewalk they had to clear out for the people of Toronto. So
those are the ones, those are the photos that kind of became iconic.
Exactly. That's what a lot of people remember, and that's sort of what engendered a lot of the scorn from across the country at the time, and to this day, really 20 years later.
Tell me about the initial reaction from the rest of the country.
The rest of the country was bemused, I guess. They're very scornful initially. On one hand, a lot of people would have woken up the following morning to headlines on the front page of their local newspaper. The Ottawa Citizen, the Province in Vancouver, the Star Phoenix in Saskatoon, the Herald in Calgary, all ran some variant either on the front page or inside the paper saying, Mayor Mel calls dials 911 was the starkest one probably from Vancouver, from the province. And that kind of summarized the shock from the rest of the country that Toronto would have to call in military assistance to help them out of this predicament. Yeah, so basically the rest of the country was stunned. They couldn't believe that Torontonians were out there themselves, shovels in hand, doing the work themselves, and said they had to call in the soldiers from all around to help them out.
When you and your colleagues talked to ordinary Torontonians who went through this, what was their reaction to the army?
It was pretty split. Some people were definitely happy to have any help, no matter how seemingly hilarious it was.
Yeah.
One of the most candid reactions we got in the course of our reporting was from the Post's own Christy Blatchford, who was...
Right, who would have been writing about it at the time.
She was writing in the National Post about it at the time. She wrote a couple of scathing columns back in January 1999 expressing her own disbelief being in the city of Toronto, the city she was living in at the time, just shocked that the army had to come in to help us out. Christy's from northern Quebec, so she has the perspective that a lot of other Canadians in...
Basically, know, everybody else in Canada
Yeah,
had.
Exactly. Comes from smaller towns and used to just pretty plainly just shoveling, you know, themselves out of these situations, out of these storms. So Christy recanted to me that she woke up one morning. She steps out of the house with her dog. She's going to walk, and she sees soldiers all over the street and seeing all of her neighbors at their windows just staring out onto the street, seeing what was happening. And she was just disgusted, in her own words, that that these people were letting this happen, that they were just sort of standing idly by as
they needed this shoveling help. Their own streets.
Yeah, that they needed this help to come in, and that she was capable of shoveling herself. She figured all her neighbors were too, and she was kind of stunned that Toronto needed this military assistance to come in.
Up next.
It wasn't just the army. One sort of oft-forgotten storyline in all this is that a group of over 100 volunteers were sent from Prince Edward Island to help out in Toronto.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details.
Give me a sense of how serious this was for the Army when they were called in, compared to, say, the huge ice storm that happened 1 year earlier.
The ice storm ended up being a catastrophe. Millions of power lines were downed. Thousands of households lost power, and dozens of people died in that ice storm as well. So the military played a key role in maintaining stability during that, restoring power lines, working with various authorities to, you know, serve an emergency role and help people in dire need during that time. And Matt Lastman's fear was that, you know, maybe not a similar catastrophe could touch Toronto, but that there could be a lot of trouble with emergency services if, you know, the snow got a lot worse. But the sort of dire further snowstorm that he anticipated didn't end up materializing. So that was why it ended up being a little bit ridiculous in the eyes of a lot of people that the army came in. Because in the end, the bison armored personnel carriers were able to transport, you know, a fair amount of people with heart attacks, for instance, to hospital. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't nearly that same amount of need, I suppose, for military help in Toronto as there was in the ice storm. It just ended up being...
It never got worse.
Yeah, a lot of shoveling for the most part. It never really got worse.
Is that why it kind of endures to this day as a joke to basically everybody in Canada?
I think that's a big part of it. The snow not having gotten worse as the army was there. They just ended up doing a bit of shoveling. The Petawawa soldiers were only there for a few days, actually, and they ended up going home soon after.
But so, they weren't even the only people that came. It wasn't just the army.
One sort of oft-forgotten storyline in all this is that as Art Eagleton and the army personnel were dispatching all these soldiers from Petawawa and mobilizing the local reservists, a group of over 100 volunteers were sent from Prince Edward Island to help out in Toronto. The transportation minister in PI at the time, a guy named Mike Curry, he remembers seeing Mel Lastman on the local CTV channel there pleading for help, saying, you know, dire situation was at hand. So he remembers feeling sorry for Toronto and realizing that the city didn't have sufficient equipment to deal with the snowfall, whereas PEI, they had the personnel, they had the equipment. So Curry decides to very quickly round up a team of over 100 volunteer snowplow operators in Charlottetown, elsewhere. And so he sends them on this 21-hour drive overnight, rousing some of them out of bed to, you know, tell them at 11 p.m. one day, they're going to come into work the next day, get prepared, meet and all that to get themselves ready. And then the next afternoon, evening, they're driving, you know, 20 plus hours to Toronto. And the PEI volunteers ended up driving through terrible road conditions, blizzards and freezing rain and just terrible conditions in general. And so they arrive in Toronto and they got to work immediately helping the city crews blow snow from downtown streets. And they ended up staying for 2 weeks. These guys worked 12-hour rotating shifts, some were on the day shift, some were on the night shift, just working very hard. And they really came through for Toronto in addition to the army. So the PEI volunteers stuck around for much longer than some of the soldiers.
You have done a tremendous job during this interview not laughing at this story. How many people start laughing as soon as you start asking them questions about this incident?
Had to be at least half. Had to be half, yeah. Calling up, in some cases, emailing or just cold calling people who didn't have a direct role in the incident but made some comment at the time, or, you know, they remember the incident vividly, a lot of people. My colleague Tyler Dawson in Alberta chatted with Stockwell Day, who was the Alberta finance minister at the time. And I'm not sure if Stockwell laughed off the bat, but he recounted vividly the sentiment around Alberta being, why aren't these people in Toronto just stepping up, you know, shoveling themselves out of the situation? And he said, Alberta today often, you know, feels as though they don't get much. They might feel ignored by central Canada, as he put it. And certainly at the time they were, they held a bit of an uncharitable view, I think was his prevailing thought toward Toronto. But it is pretty funny for a lot of people. People remember it kind of hilariously, in part, I think, because the catastrophic situation, the worst case situation that Mel Lastman had feared didn't actually materialize. So that ended up being, people were able to laugh about it, basically.
When you talk to the people who made these calls to Mel Lastman and Art Eggleton, how do they recall that decision? Are they kind of rueful about it? Are they very serious about it? Do they sort of like, well, you know, we kind of had to? Like, how do they talk about it now, 2 decades later?
Mel Lastman, for his part, has always doubled down and stood behind his decision. The first thing he told me was that when I called him up, he told me that he would do it again. Then the next thing he said, it was actually the line that ended up leading off oral history. It was, look, you don't know how much snow there was. And in my case, I didn't actually know. I wasn't in Toronto at the time. I was pretty young. But he was saying just kind of generally to myself, I guess, to anyone who might have doubted him over the years, like, you don't know how much snow there truly was. Toronto had gotten hit with these 3 record snowfalls, or the 3 snowfalls that contributed to this record amount, and more was in the forecast, and he basically says he had to do what he had to do.
And Art?
Art, we chatted for a few minutes, and he kind of got progressively more, a bit more fired up, I think, over the course of the 7 or 8 minutes we were on the phone. He remembers it as, you know, Mel calling him and Mel laying out to him how dire the situation might have gotten if this extra snowfall came up. And so Art sort of recounted the details of how that happened, who he called afterwards. But at the end, he was saying, he kind of summarized it, characterized it as a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. He was saying that if the military didn't send him help and all the extra snow was dumped on Toronto and fire trucks and ambulances couldn't get to any emergency situations that arose,
right,
then people could have been in dire need of help. And then you definitely would have heard about the military not doing anything, or Mel Lastman not doing anything. So he was saying it was kind of a catch-22 in that way, but he supported the decision, and Mel Lastman definitely stands by his call to Art Eggleton.
Well, it's only a joke now because everything turned out okay, right?
Exactly, exactly. People are able to joke about it now. That was kind of Art's main point, and that definitely rings true, I think.
How much did some of the people you talked to who weren't from Toronto enjoy getting this call?
A couple of people loved it. They really did. I spoke with the Montreal Gazette. There's a longtime legendary editorial cartoonist by the nickname of Aislinn. His real name is Terry Mosher, so I called him. And he remembers creating this cartoon at the time. He thought it was hilarious, and he said Montrealers thought it was particularly ridiculous, the decision to call, ask for military help, because they had lived through the ice storm a year before.
Right.
And so they saw this snow end up not materializing the additional dump. So they thought it was absurd that, you know, army soldiers had to come in and shovel Toronto out of this. So he remembers drawing this cartoon. He drew a man with, I think he had a leaf scarf to represent Toronto in general. And he was on the phone saying, Mayday, Mayday, my Volvo got snowed on, something along those lines. And he said he went down to, he had been hearing it all over the radio. He says the radio in Montreal is a good source for cartooning at the time to hear what people were talking about. He draws cartoon, goes down to the Gazette newsroom, and people just love it. They eat it up. The humor columnists, everyone else he was saying just loved his idea. So this runs in papers all around Canada. I guess it got picked up. So he thought it was really funny. My colleague Tyler Dawson spoke with Andy Wells, who was the mayor of St. John's, Newfoundland at the time, one of the snowiest cities anywhere in Canada.
Yeah.
The following year, I think they got hit with something like more than 600 centimeters of snow. So almost, you know, 5-6 times what Toronto got in 1999. So one thing Andy said to Tyler was he just called Lastman a national joke, said the situation was a joke, said Toronto was a laughingstock for the country at the time. So people still have very candid and forceful thoughts about this whole situation 20 years later. And
this is never going away, is it?
Never going away. Toronto's never forgetting about this. No one's ever going to let them.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks a lot.
Nick Ferris, a reporter at the National Post. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And for more from us, you know where we are. We're at thebigstorypodcast.ca with all our other episodes and a contact form for you. And we are also on Twitter at thebigstoryfpn. And you can find our entire network at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. And of course, all our pods are wherever you get them. You can find us on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Pocket Casts. Leave us a rating and leave us a review. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.